Meeting to order. It's the regular meeting of the Ethics Review Commission. Today is May 9th, 2018. It is 6:01 p.m. We are in City Hall, room 1027. Can we call the roll?
Jay Michael isn't here yet. Peter Einhorn.
Present.
Donna Beth McCormick.
Present.
Louise Sobron.
Present.
Deborah Danberg.
Here.
Ryan Thompson.
Here.
Ben Stratman.
Here.
Megan Harding.
Here.
Mary Kale.
Here.
And Dennis is not here tonight.
Can they make a surprise appearance straight from the airport?
That's a good article.
All right, let's go ahead and get started. I'm assuming item number one on the agenda is in case we need it, so we will go to our, is there anyone signed in for general citizens communication? Seeing no general citizens here, I'm assuming not. It's always nice when we have a commission meeting where nobody shows up. I miss the good old days. So we'll go to old business item number three, discussion and possible action regarding the following proposed amendments to City Code Chapter 2-7, Ethics and Financial Disclosure related to the Ethics Review Commission's subpoena power. And Cindy Crosby's here, I'm assuming, on that particular topic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commission members, Cindy Crosby's Law Department. I'm just here to follow up on the ordinance amendments that I presented at the last meeting that you had. I had also emailed to all of you a comparison draft of what was actually uploaded for the City Council agenda tomorrow. Between today and tomorrow, there's one slight change that will also occur, and it's not substantive. It's more to make sure that the sections and the subsections flow correctly under 2741, the complaints section. And so we have those in your packets if you have any questions. It's just the very first paragraph.
Okay. Are there any questions on the changes? Did anyone have a chance to review them? Is it possible to pull them up on the computer? Is that something that we could do to see them?
Could. Log in. Although actually the final version might be on my desktop.
Immediate past chair of the party.
We have a kid now.
Huh?
Yeah. Boys hurt. Boys have a lot of injuries.
Who do?
Boys.
Oh, boys. They run headlong into things at full speed.
Peter, do you have kids?
Two, an 11 and a 9-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
They don't stop running into things.
Yeah.
Full speed. At least not yet. I haven't experienced the slowdown yet.
I can imagine.
All right.
Yeah, so they pulled something up a lot.
Yeah.
It didn't look to me.
It's also this, though, right?
It's also this. Everything.
That's the attachment that we had in our backup was just the one final change, right? This non-substantive change. Is that correct?
Who's in that back house closest to the AFL-CIO building?
AFL-CIO.
That's the carriage house.
Oh, okay. So what's there now?
Okay. And the mansion's there, but on the other.
Okay.
And then downstairs. Yes. In fact, I've been out there. There's was a rain. But since we enlarged the kitchen, there's more rain.
Yeah. I was there for a wedding party for one of Harry's senior staff members that was getting married, and he hosted a party for them. And we walked around and got to tour and see it. It's really beautiful. And the only thing that they had closed off was like that, I guess what y'all refer to as the apartment. And that's because the governor and the first lady were still living there.
All right.
So the revised ordinance is already in backup online. Showing off those changes from the last draft I had sent you via email.
Okay.
So part one, this is what we...
Are there any specific questions related to the revisions to the subpoena powers?
Okay.
Commissioner Soberon?
Can you please just review the section that kind of governs what is considered confidential and what's kind of off limits for any subpoena?
Basically, the complaint and the investigation would be confidential. That
is on number four right there.
What's your subsection F.
So in the, as a practical application or for discussion of a potential practical application, the Margot Fraser case, if we had attempted to make a subpoena in that instance, counsel would have advised us under 2741 subsection F that that information would not have been up for disclosure, and it would have been basically a moot point right then. Or maybe you would have taken the subpoena and then come back and advise us upon further review, this is information that can't be disclosed.
Hopefully the law department or outside counsel would have advised beforehand. If this was current code, mm-hmm. then we would have said this is a prohibition and this is what the subpoena limits are. So
gotcha.
It wouldn't go back to counsel or anything.
Right.
So I have a question, because I recall correctly, and let me know if this isn't consistent with the current draft. There's a provision that's analogous to like a Brady rule in criminal procedure that says that the auditor, rather like the investigators, have to give over any information that they can to the respondent. And there's, I think, a little tension with this subsection. So I guess my question is, if this were code, what would the auditor's office be handing over to the respondent? Because I think a liberal interpretation of this, to me, suggests that it's like nothing. If this subsection were to be construed like very broadly. So can you speak to kind of what the auditor's office would be turning over?
So in the previous section, that what would be the new subsection E, that would be the exculpatory evidence
right.
type provision. And so it's not necessarily that they would have to turn over something that's part of the investigation, but they can tell you things of who they've talked to. And I can see what your point is about being a conflict, and if it's something that would make it more clear, adding to the extent we have allowed under the Public Information Act or other applicable law, mm-hmm.
I would consider subsection E other applicable law.
Okay.
But we could say, you know, Public Information Act, subsection E above, or other applicable law.
I mean, the instances where we have received complaints that were from anonymous complainants have come through the auditor's office. And, you know, I guess my perspective in trying to defend the role of anonymous complaints, though, you know, the examples that we've been faced with on this commission are fairly transparently, you know, political attacks against some city official by somebody who doesn't want their name revealed. That being said, I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. There is an important role for an anonymous complaint process. And to me, they file the complaint with the auditor's office. The auditor's office does an investigation. Who filed the complaint and why they filed it is not necessarily material to whether a violation has occurred. There's obviously a motivation, and the motivation may or may not be interesting, but you know, it's the results of the auditor's investigation that is truly germane to our process. So, you know, I'm reticent to sort of resist. I know that we did subpoena that information, you know, upon reflection. I'm a little uncomfortable with having asked for that information just because it's not necessarily germane to whether a violation occurred. It's really only germane to that there was a political motivation to try to smear a city official or a former city official. So,
except for the fact that, I mean, the way this is written, the fox is guarding the hen house.
Yes.
I mean, under this provision, if the auditor brings a complaint, there's no one policing. And this happens in the prosecutorial world also. I mean, the entire, you know, prosecutorial structure of Williamson County was brought down because of something like this. But, you know, the problem is that there's no one policing the auditor's office to make sure that they've turned over what might exculpate the respondent. And, you know, I mean, there was kind of a middle ground approach proposed, I think, with regard to the Margo Fraser case, where maybe we would review it in camera with legal counsel to see what could and could not be disclosed. But, you know, I don't feel bad about requesting that information. So.
Other thoughts?
I don't want to belabor a point or anything, but I'm trying to understand what the difference is between in subsection F, all papers and communications relating to complaint, the difference between that and in subsection E, evidence actually known to a complainant intending to negate guilt or mitigate the seriousness of the offense. Because I see the potential for overlap, and I guess I'm looking for examples where evidence that tends to mitigate or negate the seriousness of the offense is not considered papers and communications relating to a complaint.
The example I could try to present is in past cases, the auditors provides a report and they say, we interviewed 5 people. Out of those 5 people, 4 said they saw the violation, they thought, et cetera. But number 5 was like, well, maybe not, or maybe. And so I think that would be information in their report of 5 were interviewed, 4 supported this this allegation, and 1 disputed it. That's information they're already voluntarily providing to the ERC.
What about their identities?
That would not be released.
I mean, another thing to consider is that, I'm sorry, I'm speaking out of turn, but
please.
I mean, we know that the city is often taken to task for their interpretation of the Public Information Act. I mean, it's in the paper very often where, you know, I believe you have to, what, you make the opinion, you ask the Attorney General for an opinion on whether certain things can be disclosed. And I don't know what the city's record is on that. I think probably the ones where the city gets it wrong are probably publicized more than when the city gets it right. But again, I mean, you know, I kind of have a question of, well, okay, so if the determination is made that no, this does not require to be disclosed under the PIA, you know, do we have the, I don't know, do we have the appeal process to the Attorney General to ask, you know, is this the correct interpretation of that, that law?
The city as an entity could then file suit, but not the ERC. I mean, that would be a request that you could send to the city attorney's office, to your council member.
I guess the respondent might have standing as a private citizen to issue a public, issue an open records request.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just kind of thinking through all the.
Is there a will on the commission to weigh in on this subject? It's on the council's agenda for tomorrow?
Yes.
Weigh in how?
We could support the changes. We could support the changes with revisions. We could oppose the changes. We could.
Consensus.
Hmm?
I don't think there's consensus.
Doesn't sound like it to me. No. But.
Yeah. I mean. I'm not.
Just make our council.
I'm not of a mind to make a motion. I'm appreciative of the effort that's being made, because I think it goes without saying that we as a body were pretty frustrated by the actions related to our, you know, air quote subpoena power. And so I think that this, the hard work that's being done on this to clarify that is really important, because
it will help us know better what, you know, but it, I think it'll help us know better what we can and can't ask for, but I don't know that it helps us with the credibility issue in the community that is going to be the subject of our next agenda item, right? So,
I mean, this is clearly an improvement from what we saw before. I still don't think that when we call it independent, it's only independent, I guess, of the city council members who appointed each of us.
Well, that'll be the next.
It's
agenda.
More dependent on the auditor's office.
Well, that's the next agenda item with regards to the Independent Ethics Commission. But yes. So if there's not, sorry.
Just super quick question. can you scroll down to the section that talks about the consequences of not honoring the subpoena or responding to the subpoena?
What page is that?
I don't know if we have it.
It starts on the bottom of page 3. And
sanctions?
Yes. And the language that's actually added as at the top of page 4.
And this would,
what's the practical implication of this change?
It would take it out of the criminal penalties. So
it's not a criminal penalty to
correct.
Violate a subpoena by this commission.
So to follow up, what is there a consequence to not responding to a subpoena?
There are other provisions in the sanction.
We could admonish somebody who violates.
For those violations, and it's pretty broad. So there's a letter of notification, a letter of admonition, a reprimand, recommendation of removal. And then always, if it's a city staff person, then it would go through the city manager's office, whether they were a municipal civil service employee or if they were exempt. So,
but city employees aren't We can't subpoena city employees, correct?
You can't subpoena them, but there is a provision that says they have to cooperate in the beginning of this draft.
Legal force and effect of that requirement for cooperation, what is the definition of cooperation?
Well, what's a sanction for not cooperating? I mean, I assume cooperation means your boss tells you to be at the hearing, and if you're not there, your boss pisses you the next day, but...
Can I ask what the, not that I'm like eager to throw the hammer at people or anything, but just what the rationale was to remove the criminal penalty?
Part of the rationale was the difficulty in getting it to municipal court. And so there's several ways that it could get to municipal court. And one of them was by, one of the suggestions was by the chair filing a complaint and then it would be submitted. And so then we would probably get outside attorneys or different attorneys because we're here representing the ERC, we're representing the city and the county council, and then the prosecutor's office is in the law department. And so that's a separate issue that just adds extra confusion, but it's generally just getting it to municipal court and running it through the process had traps in it.
Okay.
How are subpoenas generally enforced?
Contempt of court.
You mean in, yeah, it's contempt of court.
Throw them in jail. Fine them.
Fine.
Usually fine them and then throw them in jail.
Is someone making a present?
I mean, oh, I'm sorry. It's the options. That doesn't happen very often.
Lane, is someone making a recommend or a representation? Sorry, Brent's not working on it. Is someone presenting this to council tomorrow? I guess that goes to either of you, but
no, it's on their consent agenda, and so the council members have the option to pull the item, and then they could distribute their motion sheets as to what changes they would want to see, or there could be a discussion. But right now, there's not a presentation anticipated, and it's. It would be on the consent agenda where it would be approved with one motion with other items.
Right.
I can say that the two comments that were made at the last ERC meeting was provided to the council, and you can see the addition of Burnett County, for example. And so I advised them of the comments made at the last meeting. So they're aware of those, besides whatever communications you've provided them.
Was it simply contemplated just taking away the subpoena authority?
I mean, it doesn't have any teeth.
If it doesn't have any teeth, what's the point of having it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's some symbolism with a layperson receiving a document that says subpoena.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think people have an understanding of that, whether they have an understanding that there may not be any consequences for not following it.
My counter to that, of course, being that the layperson's probably going to come just by being requested because they're a public citizen trying to do the right thing. As we've learned from experience, it's not the layperson that we would probably have to use a subpoena on.
It's a way to get that.
I don't know. I still think it's, I mean, it's not a great many number of cases, I would imagine, but that, you know, if someone was like, well, am I going to show up to this commission hearing because I've been summoned, and then the person who gets a subpoena saying, like, oh, I probably should. I don't know. If I were to get a subpoena, I think... I wouldn't think nearly as dismissively about a request to appear, regardless of the entity and regardless of what, unbeknownst to me, sanctions might have left. So, I think there'd still be value. I do think if we don't address it tonight, which I don't know if I have enough ideas to. Do it, but I think it would be worth coming back to the question of sanctions to see. I mean, because right now it seems like the option before us is like teeth or no teeth, like you're saying, for a subpoena power. So I think it'd be worth coming back to look at it.
You could always ask your council member to postpone it if you want to look at it further. Or you could show up to speak on the, sign up to speak on the item on Thursday.
Has there been any interest from council members on this? of
as this is the direction of the law department to take this on at the request of the council, right?
The council did direct us to bring back recommendations.
Okay, but there hadn't been any big push to do anything that you've heard from council members.
I have not been contacted for a big push on one item or another. I have received one contact, but I think they've been pretty busy with lots of other things.
Yeah, I can't see this. It'd be a hot item unless somebody is a bee in their bonnet about it.
That's right. All right, well, unless there's a will on the commission to take some formal action tonight, we can just table this item for now, and each individual member is at their discretion can go and speak on their own behalf, obviously as an individual commissioner, not on the commission's behalf. But seeing none, we'll go ahead and we'll move on. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
All right, the next item is item 3B, which is discussion and possible action regarding the Charter Review Commission recommendations. In your backup, you have recommendation number one, democracy dollars, and then you have some information on the recommendation for a independent ethics commission. So obviously we discussed the democracy dollars item with the chair and the vice chair of the Charter Review Commission at our last meeting. As well as the Independent Ethics Commission, if I'll just open it up to commissioners to weigh in on this, in reviewing the backup on the Independent Ethics Commission, it looks like the chair and the vice chair did bring our concerns back to the full commission. And Commissioner Thompson, did you go to the CRC meeting?
I did. I spoke at the beginning. I did not. They had a lot of stuff on their agenda, so I didn't really stick around for the votes on any of this stuff, but I did talk to their chairperson.
And it looks like they've changed some things, but not some other things. So obviously we at our what we have as options tonight are to support, oppose, suggest changes, or do nothing.
We don't have any, I mean, obviously not. But
they
we,
didn't, we didn't ask them to come back again tonight, okay. No.
So, I'm just going to zero in on one piece of this, which is the selection of the commission members, which is really kind of the message that I took, not on behalf of this commission, because this commission hasn't voted on anything or authorized me to make any statements on behalf of the commission, but I did go to the Charter Review Commission meeting, which was only a few days, I believe, after our meeting. I will tell you that their chairperson, Jessica Palvino, did a really good job of kind of explaining what our perspectives had been when they came in. If you recall, I think one of my arguments regarding the selection, so just to set this up, the way the selection of these commission members would be under their original plan was that the auditor's office was going to select some independent contractor auditors who would then go out and get a pool of candidates who they would then, I'm not sure if it was a random drawing at that point, but certainly the auditor's office would choose the contractors, and the contractors would essentially choose the commission members. And of course, this was all based on this, what I believe to be a fiction, that we are not independent from our council members, and that there needs to be some additional separation between the council members and this commission. I expressed the concern that putting that power in the hands of the auditor's office, who I consider many times to be kind of a prosecutorial type body when we have ethics complaints, is the wrong way to go. That in fact, you're putting, at that point, I think you open yourself up even more to outside influence when you're essentially having the prosecutor pick the judge and the jury. I said those very words at the Charter Review Commission meeting. My understanding, and you can see this through the report, was that there was actually a proposal made at that meeting after I had left that would have change this to where four of the members of the commission would be appointed by a two-thirds vote of the city council, so a supermajority of the council, and then a fifth member would be appointed by those other four members. That amendment failed by a vote of 3-5-1. And so what they put in place now is, I think, a little bit, for example, I know one thing is that they've changed the provisions about kind of what you have to be an expert with regard to. I think that there was an and at the end of that, at the beginning, that basically said you had to be an expert in anything and everything under the sun related to ethics. I think they've changed that a bit. But the selection process is still pretty much the same, and that is that the auditor's office, again, chooses the independent auditors, who will then choose the pool, and then from that pool, I think there will be a selection of the commissioners randomly. So I don't really support this. I think if you've had the opportunity to read some of the things that have been said about our commission in the press, that seems to be leading to all of this, I think that it's absolutely wrong. There was an article in the Austin Monitor talking about, I think, the fact that, you know.
I brought them.
Sorry?
I brought the papers.
Yeah, I mean, there's been things said like, you know, we're so weak that Councilmember Zimmerman didn't even appear or when he had a hearing. I think there was something about there's only been so many, you know, slaps on the wrist in the last 3 years. You had the whole thing about one of the respondents, Commission Arif Panju, who I believe was my first ethics commission hearing, was a circus, saying that you don't see anybody other than those with minority viewpoints getting dragged into the ethics commission.
I don't know what he's basing that on.
You know, I think there was a remark in the press that we've only had like four sanctions cases. Only in four cases in the last 3 years have we issued sanctions. I can't find that in this article right now, but I actually had Lynn go back through the past 3 years and see how many times we've issued sanctions, and I count 11 times, including, you know, during the first round of 10-1 elections. I mean, we issued sanctions to Councilmember Kazar. We issued sanctions to Suzanne Almanza, who was running. I believe there was a letter of notification given to the police chief. So these are not people with minority viewpoints, you know. And so I just think the press has been really misleading on this.
Well, and what about the proposals? Do anything to address...
Sure, and I think the reality of the situation is that so much of this is coming from our decision in the Margo Price case, which has been called, I don't think it was called disgusting by the city auditor, but I think she said that the decision disgusted
her. She was disgusting.
And so if you follow the reasoning of that, only a disgusting decision can make someone disgusted in my mind. And so I just think there's been a lot of vitriol that's motivated this supposed change, and I agree with you, Commissioner Danberg. I don't see how this makes the situation any better. I certainly think that in the views of the people who know this stuff, which are the people sitting at this table, I cannot imagine that any of you agree that it's a good idea to put the choice of the people who sit at this table in the auditor's office. And that is the message that I would like us to take back to the council. When they do finally get around to voting on this, because I just think it's not right.
Do we know when this is on the council's agenda for action?
You're right there.
So the Charter Review Commission, some of the members intend to present to the work session of City Council on June 12th. That would be in this building in the boards and commissions room.
So they present on June 12th with action to follow?
Well, it would likely then also be on the council agenda for June 14th. Your next meeting is June 13th. I can give you the timeline for the last time there were charter review commission proposals, and that was 2012. I haven't looked through all the meetings, but I can give you a rough timeline if you want me to give you that.
That'd be good. Thank you.
So February 22nd is when the 2012 Charter Commission issued a report. The first meeting I found after that was 2012, a regular council meeting. There were two items that were addressed. On April 26th, there were seven items on council's agenda, one of which was a general, the November election. This will, I remind you, there were a number of campaign finance items. There was the 10-1 council. There was a change to hold the elections in November as opposed to May. City attorney be appointed by city council. That was one of the ones. But then on June 7th, they had another item on the council agenda on campaign finance. Then June 12th, at a council work session, there was direction for staff to draft ordinances to come back to council. The main discussion then took place on June 26th at council work session, and then at the regular council meeting on June 28th. That was when they had a lot of speakers come on a number of items, mostly on the 10-1, and there was also an 8-2-1 proposal. Separate proposal that was not part of the Charter Review Commission, but it was an alternative proposal. And there were three other charter amendments discussed at that meeting. July 31st, there was a work session. August 2nd, a regular council meeting. And then finally on August 7th, that was the final third reading on those items.
And there would be a deadline of August 20th.
August 20th is the deadline for council to call an election this year. So it would have to happen before then. There are no meetings scheduled in July, but if they wanted to call a special call meeting, they could. And certainly it's not unusual for council to schedule special call meetings when they're bumping up close to, you know, that August 20th date. They've got a lot of bond items this time. They also did in 2012. So
is there an August hearing? Or an August meeting?
Yes.
Okay,
there
so
are
just
August,
no July meeting.
Just no July meetings. Now, last year there were no July meetings, but they did. Their first August meeting was August 2nd, and I'm not sure if it was regularly scheduled or they added it, but they then had a work session July 31st.
Do we know when the August council meeting is scheduled for this summer?
I can pull that up.
Sorry, I played 20 questions. You know, the reason I ask is just because you make a good point about June 14th potentially being the last viable date, although...
Well, there is a council meeting June 2 weeks after the 14th.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure if they're having a meeting in August, it's not going to be as late as the 24th. So there's multiple opportunities for them to.
I would hope that the council would not take action 2 days after receiving a presentation by the Charter Review Commission. That seems like an awful snap decision.
And by the way, I mean, as I'm sure you know, this piece of this is one of many, many things that they're. I mean, I think the Democracy Dollars piece is going to get a lot of coverage, but.
Okay. So August 9th is the scheduled meeting before August 20th. And, yeah, they could add special sessions. They can also vote in a work session,
I don't think we should hope for them to call a special voting session in July. They like their July off, as far as I can tell.
Yeah,
I want July off.
But I think there's still a lot of work to be done here, though. I mean, just looking at what we talked about last time, I'm glad some of what Brian expressed concern about, Mr. Thompson, was touched on in a way. But, I mean, there's other things that I think at least a few of you agree, things like there's two different places in here where they refer to these members not being able to serve for 2 years after being on the Independent Ethics Commission in a political party, in any service form, working on a campaign, fundraising for a candidate, being a political consultant, rating candidates, lobbying the city, holding elective office or campaigning for elective office. Those are completely unenforceable requirements on people after they depart this role. I would also look at one of the responsibilities of the IEC is to appoint an executive director and set their salary, yet somehow this, I'm told, is going to be absorbed within city resources, that there's no new, there's no fiscal note to it, essentially, other than the cost of appointing the officers. Yet there's a blank check, literally and figuratively,
yep,
for them to appoint the executive director and set their salary. I look further in and I see the subpoena issue. Executive director or their designee may compel the attendance of persons and the production of documents, papers, books, accounts, letters, and records by subpoena. As I say often, sitting around this table with you guys, I'm not an attorney, but I'm not stupid. And that language right there very clearly allows the executive director to act on a subpoena without the recommendation or direction of the commission members.
Right.
We don't even have fake subpoena power, but now the executive director has carte blanche subpoena power with their salary that is carte blanche too. So I just think that there's a lot of holes in here, and I'll, you know, they're not sitting in the room, but for the sake of, you know, the record, I appreciate that these people have worked hard on it, and I didn't go to the commission or their April 18th or 13th meeting like Commissioner Thompson did, but I think there's a bunch of issues in here, so... I know I will be talking to my council member about it.
I don't know who came up with this. I don't know the reason behind it. But having been on this commission when it was 7-1 and now when it is 11 members, 7 members and 11 members, I think that this commission does an excellent job. We all get along, even if we don't agree. And we act like a court, we act like a jury, and I don't know where this came from. And then the other thing with this is, and I asked the last time, where is this $1 million+ coming from that is supposed to be the commission budget? Well, they don't know.
You're talking about the fiscal note for the democracy dollars piece, right?
No, no.
Well, I think they're interrelated.
This
They are related.
Yeah.
I think it was explained to us last time that the necessity for the executive director and the staff stems from the administration of the Democracy for Dollars program.
But they had no, I said, is this new money? Is this coming out of budget, allocated money to some other department? Nobody knows. This whole thing is crazy.
Well, it came from one person who's a member of the Charter Review Commission.
Well, I will say that Mr. Lewis voted for the changes with regard to the selection. He was one of the 3 people who voted to change, for what it's worth.
Commissioner Danberg.
It appears to me that much, I've only gotten to briefly look at the media coverage, but the auditor's office is a source of a lot of the negative stuff that seems to be in the media, which is some evidence of the fact that if they can't get us to go along with whatever it is they found, they'll just change the way the findings occur. And I really don't think that's appropriate. The auditor's office does a good job of what they're supposed to do. They look at all the evidence and find every possible violation they can. In the meantime, I'm sure they come across exculpatory information. Unlike a prosecutor in a court of law, there's no requirement that they give that exculpatory evidence to the defendants, even though they are the people who have found it and they hold it unilaterally. There's nothing in this that requires that they give exculpatory information to the defendants or to the hearing officers. Now, they have given us some when they've said, you know, the violation in this regard was pretty minor. But all the documentation, all the charts, all the slides, all the evidence that's actually given to us is all damning. And any exculpatory information that we've gotten has not been explicit or specific in the least. It's been, in these regards, they were only a little bit bad. As I say, I think the auditor's office does a good job at what it is they do. What it is they do is that they find and prosecute violations wherever they can. That's what their jobs are. If they are to then be judge, jury, and executioner in a tight relationship with hearing officers who may have no constitutional training whatsoever, who may not understand why it would be unconstitutional to prohibit political activity after the people left and have no, what's the purpose of that, for gosh sake? I would think that if you've been a hearing officer and you've learned a whole bunch about how the city works and you have good ideas to make it better, running for city council might be a really great idea. I really think that this is nothing more than some people who wanted different outcomes trying to change the way the outcomes are found. Because, you know, they aren't being held in an unquestioning position by those of us who are already pretty darn independent.
I don't know who came up with this.
Are there further comments?
It's just, if it ain't broke, don't mess with it. Wow. And we do a good job.
Playing the devil's advocate, I would say that there are people who think that it is broke. I don't necessarily agree with them that it's broke. I think that they're looking for stronger sanctions coming out of this or out of this body, and you know.
But the specific things they say are broke, which is that we don't have enough sanctions, penalties, and aren't strong enough, are not fixed by this different format.
Right. It can't be, because state law limits what we can do.
Is there a will of the commission to weigh in tonight, to work towards weighing in June?
If we don't, I don't know who's going to.
I would advise, if that's the way it's going to be, that, and Lynn, you may be able to weigh in on this, but I would think the work session is where we need to talk to them about it. Simply because of the more informal nature of that, I think that's when the CRC will be presenting. I think it'd be good to counterbalance at that, which means that I don't think we're going to have another meeting before.
Unless we call a special call meeting.
Would you agree? I mean, that's not really, I'm not asking you for a legal opinion, but I mean, I'm just not as familiar with, I mean, I've been to council meetings before. I don't think I've ever been to a work session.
Well, I mean, you can certainly ask for the Ethics Review Commission to provide a briefing as well as to your position on their recommendations. You can certainly ask for that to be added to the agenda. You can ask to be put on the council committee meeting agenda to provide a counter. I have to apologize. I haven't been doing the council meetings long enough
sure,
to really say that I have not seen this scenario come up before. But and you might you know, I guess probably the best suggestion I would have is check with your individual council members about what they would recommend would be the best way to but you can certainly, I mean, you can vote tonight to say we would like to be added to either the council work session or the council meeting. On the council work session would be on the 12th. The council meeting would be on the 14th. The one benefit of going on the 14th is that you would know what their presentation was on the 12th. You would have your meeting on the 13th. And then the council meeting would be the next day. But that's, you know, totally up to you.
Wouldn't that require us to be either broadly or perhaps unanimously in agreement on what we're going to say, though?
I would think so, yes. I mean, the alternative is we could formally ask them to not take action at the June 14th meeting to allow us to hear the presentation on the 12th and formulate a response on the 13th.
Kind of like that idea.
And I would further say that I think in order to ease this process for this commission, because it's not great to try to write these things at a commission meeting, we probably should have a work group of people who are willing to sit down and dig into it a little bit and craft a recommendation for this commission. And we essentially know what they're saying, so we can begin to sort of work on a skeleton of it, and then based on what we hear on the 12th, it can be tweaked.
Well, and I think that we can get a copy of the, this is obviously a draft report. I mean, there's like literally blanks in it.
Yeah.
I don't think that the chair of that commission would have a problem giving me a copy of the report well before the 12th.
No.
I'm assuming it'll be submitted to backup. The work session backup is like the council meeting backup, right? It comes out well in advance.
Well, I didn't think it was going to be done before that, right? I mean, my understanding was it was going to be done.
I think they're trying to get it done as quickly as reasonable. And I checked with the chair to see if she would have it ready before tonight, and she said that wouldn't be doable.
That's what I heard.
She sent an updated, did you pull the one that came at 4? So I got an updated draft at 4 o'clock. And I don't think it's the final, but I can forward that to you. And I do expect that either next week or the following week that the chair will finalize the report.
Our safety text yesterday saying that she'd be done today or tomorrow, so on
okay.
Jessica time, that means probably yeah. Monday. but the point is that we may actually have it, and I think we will have it at the work group meeting, likely, if that meeting took place in the next couple of weeks.
I think so.
All right. Is there interest in creating a working group to work on this and bring a recommendation back to the full commission?
Are we looking to have wording that would be something that we vote on, or are we, in addition to that, I'm sure we'd want to do that. In addition to that, though, are we looking to have some sort of a statement that can be read by someone representing the commissioners?
But usually what we do is we do a recommendation to council, and there's a template that we use, and it can be drafted as a resolution, or it can be drafted just in prose form.
And the format of those, I think, are kind of the whereas, and you know, in
either
the whereas,
you
can make
whereas,
your statements
or we can say specific to section 1.03, we recommend, and then we can put revised language in there. Mm-hmm. We can.
Sure, but I would say if you want to make kind of more of a policy statement, you know,
And we can
certainly can fit into the format.
And in the past, members of the commission have gone and testified carrying a recommendation of the commission. Former Chair Kaplan did that on several occasions. So.
I just don't see how to put in a resolution what I think they would need to hear to understand where we're coming from, which is the auditor's office is evidence gatherers. That's their role. They gather evidence. That's a police detective's role. They gather the evidence. They're on one side in a hearing. The police would not be able to jury shop and judge shop. And I think unless we make it that clear, they're not going to get what we're talking about. And unless we make it clear that a prosecutor has an ethical oath that they take where they have to reveal exculpatory evidence, the police auditors don't have that requirement and don't feel an obligation to do so. So it's even more dramatic as far as due process and independence of the hearing body, meaning us or this new group. That kind of stuff is much better said in a presentation, I think, than in a resolution.
And I'm sure we can do both, obviously.
Yeah.
So, because I agree with you. I think there's that component of it that's important. And I think explaining that with facts, you know, versus emotion, mm-hmm. like you've just described, is the proper way to go about it. Because I think, not picking on the auditor's office, but I think it gives us as a commission, assuming we're in general agreement on it, an opportunity to take a little bit of the high road mm-hmm. and explain that our position here is not about protecting our own roles in this commission, nor about stripping away the ability of the auditor to play their critical
function.
They
should do exactly what it is that they do.
Right, but separate from that, we're in a way we would be kicking the can down the road because they're going to get 2, 3, whatever years down the road, and they're going to go, well, this is still problematic. It's a different kind of problematic. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a narrative that probably needs to be laid out. I tend to agree with you. On top of, you know, a technical list of things, you know, because again, selfishly, I think there are some small things in here that need to be pointed out too. So,
right.
I mean, I'll just lay my cards on the table and I'll say that I'm not necessarily opposed to the idea of an independent ethics commission. I'm completely agnostic on whether an ethics commission should have 5 members, 7 members, or 11 members. But there are issues in here. Then the auditor's appointing the members or being involved in the appointment of the members of the commission is not appropriate to me. I also think that the fiscal note of $92,000 every 8 years is a little bit of a joke. It's premised on the idea that current staff that staff the ethics commission could be moved. Maybe, I don't even know. It doesn't. It's silent on that. I just don't. You know, the way it was described to us at our last meeting, it sounded like, you know, they were going to be able to create their own budget, and then it would take a supermajority of the council to override their budget request. And, you know, an independent ethics commission would have the ability to hire an executive director and potentially legal counsel and support staff. I mean, there's a whole administering of this democracy dollars, which is a whole separate issue, which I don't even want to get into because I honestly don't have an opinion on that. I have a personal opinion, but I don't have an ethics review commission opinion on that. So,
speaking of that, then, if there was going to be a work group, would it be limited to the creation of the, it's not a rhetorical question, I'm kind of opening it up for everyone. Would it be limited to just the issue of the Independent Ethics Review Commission? Would it also be the Democracy for Dollars issue? Do we want to stay away from the Democracy for Dollars?
I'm certainly willing to hear a recommendation from a working group on the Democracy for Dollars. I would hope that the two would be separated so that, you know, if I felt inclined to support the recommendation on the Independent Ethics Commission but wanted to maybe not either vote against or abstain on the Democracy Dollars recommendation, I'd want them as two separate recommendations.
I have personal opinions about the Democracy for Dollars, but I don't see them as being part of the charge of this group.
Well, they would fall under the Independent Ethics Commission. So in as much as, you know, if we wanted to fight to maintain this commission, but they wanted to move forward on Democracy for Dollars, or Democracy Dollars, Democracy for Dollars.
That's a Freudian slip
right there. I think that's the problem we're trying to fix, actually.
Yeah, I think so.
The cure for citizens united.
But I mean, if the council were persuaded to keep the commission the way it is, but they were also persuaded to pursue this pilot project of Democracy Dollars, it could fall under this commission. So, you know, I mean.
And the other thing I asked the other day is, why do they think that we are Seattle? You know, and I said,
everyone usually thinks we're Portland, don't they?
Yeah.
Or Portland, wherever. But
no, no, it's Seattle.
Portland or Seattle, wherever. And I asked, are any other cities doing any of this? Well, they didn't know. They'd have to look at it. Duh.
Well, one correction. As far as things falling under this, if they did do the Democracy for Dollars, ethical violations would come to us, but we would not be in charge of administering it and all that kind of stuff. That's ridiculous. They'd have to have a completely...
Well, they'd have to have support staff, which is what it's called for, right?
No fiscal note.
No, the Democracy for Dollars has a different fiscal note.
I bet it does.
Yeah, it's a different...
It's
it has
to
a different
me, that's
fiscal note.
Totally
it was
separate from...
Unless,
yeah,
there, unless there's an ethical violation.
$685,000 for a two-year election cycle.
Counting the dollars themselves?
That's what the... It's how much... Initial technology costs of $75,000. Miscellaneous office supply costs up to $10,000. Contract voucher signature verification is estimated at $20,000.
Well, don't you recall that they said that there was some public outreach money that was about $1 million budget that they thought that that could be moved over to?
And the vouchers will be capped at no more than $1.5 million. So that was the program administration versus the actual vouchers themselves. I think 685 is just the administration.
To put a T on it, I think that it sounds like the general consensus is to separate these two issues cleanly. To go to your question, Commissioner Thompson.
Mm-hmm. Is there a motion to create a working group?
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Danberg, second by Commissioner McCormick. Is there a discussion? We can take up the appointments to the working group as the next item if we would like, or we could do it as part of this. Is there anyone who's interested in being on the work group? Commissioner Thompson,
let's just vote on whether we're going to do one.
All right, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
Discussion on the creation of the working group on to make a recommendation on matters that are being proposed by the Charter Review Commission. Is that the motion? To be clear?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstaining?
I'm abstaining.
Okay. With one abstention, that passes unanimously.
I would make a motion to appoint Commissioner Thompson as chair emeritus of the working group.
Chair extraordinary. Okay. Yeah. And Commissioner Sobron, did I see that you were indicating that you'd be interested? Okay.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else who'd be interested? Commissioner Danberg.
How many people do you want to have on the
committee? We can have anything short of a quorum.
As many as five. But I think two or three people is probably fine.
And we could all have input.
And it would only be making a recommendation to come back to us. So anyway, so are you interested in being on it, or would you like to?
Yeah, I'll be on.
Okay, so we
it.
Have
is,
four
Is there
members.
Anybody who's uncomfortable with kinds of bomb thrower statements that I've been making and a couple of others have been making, who would like to add a different perspective in this working group?
I trust Commissioner Sobron to keep you guys well grounded.
I think this is a single meeting working group. You know, we don't really have a lot of time, so I'm thinking one.
And yeah, I guess that is a good point. We have time is of the essence, so you know, volunteer if you are available.
I'll give you
your bomb. I'm behind you.
All right, so we have Commissioner, we have a motion for Commissioner Thompson, Commissioner Soberon, Commissioner Danberg, and Commissioner McCormick to form the working group. Moved by Commissioner Stratman. Is there a second?
Yes.
Second by Commissioner Danberg. Mm-hmm. Discussion?
They'll do great.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining?
I'm abstaining.
Okay, Commissioner Harding is abstaining on that. Passes unanimously otherwise. All right. Is there anything else we'd like to talk about on this particular topic?
The only other thing I was going to say, just for y'all to take into your thought, is because I think Commissioner Danberg said it really well, talking about that my word of saying narrative, but I think is along the lines of what she was saying is, I can only speak for myself, obviously, but I think it's important that we make sure folks understand whenever a presentation is made that there's no self-interest here. I mean, again, I'm only speaking for myself, but I'm not still wearing a suit and tie after 7 o'clock at night because I'm here for my health or because I think this is going to elect me president of the United States. I was asked to do this like all of you, and I'm enjoying it and trying to do good work.
I appreciate that you wear a tie. I never wear a tie.
I'm
wearing shorts.
But point is,
discuss the dress code.
That's right. Dress code. Yeah. But full
disclosure. Then we always have supper up here, too.
That's right. That's right.
Off of the party.
But I think, without speaking for anybody else, I think everybody generally agrees we're not here for our health or our fattening of our wallets. We're here to, you know, try to do some good work. And so I think the idea that we're, you know, doing this at the behest of our council members or to sway things, you know, to help our council members or something like that is a little.
Because whoever appointed this commission, Charter Review Commission.
Okay.
All right. So you guys will just powwow after the meeting and find a time that works for you guys to get together.
Yeah, we'll probably push it via email. I think that's always easier to have.
Sounds good. We will defer to our chair extraordinary of the working group to help bring you guys all together.
Chair is a combination of chin and hair. That's how we got that title for you, Brian.
All right. So now, hearing no further action on 3B, we'll move on to 4A and we'll take up discussion and possible action regarding the following: annual commission election officers for terms May 1st, 2017 through April 30th, 2018. Allow my first piece of business on this to be an apology. It's my understanding that we're actually supposed to do this at the April meeting. I just neglected to put it on the agenda. It wasn't my Fidel Castro way of trying to hold on to power for an extra month, because I will start this off with an LBJ style statement that I will neither accept nor do I seek renomination to be your chair. I'd like to return to the back bench. I think I've had the honor of serving you guys as your chair for, I can't even remember how many years. It feels like 100, but
in dog years.
I am no longer seeking to be the chair. It's my understanding that Vice Chair Harding is also seeking to step out of a leadership role, so I will accept a nomination for a chair, sure. Vice Chair, one or the other.
I think we can move right on down the ladder of the officer, and I think that Commissioner Chet Stratman would be a very good officer. He presided very well whenever he was
chair. That's right.
Chair.
We were not available. That's right.
So I think Commissioner Stratman.
Right. We've got
for chair or
for chair.
Despite
second.
My lack of knowledge.
Oh,
we got a second from Commissioner Thompson down there. So the motion by McCormick, second
I'll
by Thompson.
You.
All right. Is there discussion? All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
I'll abstain.
Now you get to move into this seat and take us through the next
one. Oh, don't move. Just see what we're saying.
Yeah.
He's like, you got it.
A little bit too fast.
You got it.
He's talking about last year.
And I think that we have a commissioner who is not here, but who has been very active on the commission. And
since he's not here, let's nominate.
And unless that we have someone else who would like to step up to the plate as the vice chair.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm looking down the way, and I don't see
you looking at.
I will editorialize and say that we're not catching Dennis with his pants down. He's okay taking
yeah,
on a role
okay.
if we
he's
decide
okay with
to,
it.
to do that. It doesn't preclude anyone else from wanting to do it, just saying we're not, I don't want anyone thinking we're catching them off guard.
I'm not hearing any rumblings from this end of the table, but
I thought you were going after J. Michael, since he isn't
No, we hadn't. That would be blindsiding him, but Dennis has agreed, I think, that he will.
So that's a motion for, I'm sorry,
for
Chair,
Commissioner
why don't
Spade?
You go ahead and preside over this?
I didn't want to set you to thunder.
Crossed out, see? I crossed out Chair on my name tag.
Shouldn't we switch seats?
I tried. They wouldn't let me.
Okay, so that's a motion for in absentia, Commissioner Spade to serve as Vice Chair.
I understand he's on an airplane, so that's
I will
right
second
now.
That motion.
Here you go. Second from... former Chair Einhorn, past chair Einhorn. Discussion on the motion. Hearing none. All those in favor of Commissioner Spate being our new Vice Chair.
Aye.
Opposed.
No.
Abstain. Passes unanimously. Minus well him. And J. Michael.
I just crossed it out.
Well,
it's mostly ceremonial.
I suppose then if we're scratching things out, we need to write secretary on somebody's. I'm not very good at doing one job. I certainly can't do two. So I would entertain a motion to have someone serve as secretary if they so desire.
He's the secretary currently. He was the secretary. So
I was, yeah.
We need a new secretary.
Currently
now, this might be an opportunity to punish another person.
I have an idea about somebody who could do it well, but anybody want to make a motion for anybody to do it? Does anybody want to do it? We're all
friends. I was
going to
say, is there
an interest?
Commissioner Soberon, would you accept a nomination to be secretary?
I would like a refresher on the duties of the secretary before.
Well,
do we have a binding?
Well, for starters, you got to wear a tie.
Did he bring one? He brought one. All right.
There you go. And it's also a no beard coalition.
Deal breaker.
And then you have to preside when the other two are
really
gone.
The largest function, I defer to the chair to explain, but the largest function of the secretary is to make sure that the minutes are accurate before they go to the full commission, before each meeting, to make sure they reflect your recollection of what happened at the previous meeting.
Okay. The good news being that we have awesome city staff supporting us, and I've found 0.0 errors in them in the year that I've been doing this, or however long. So
I'll go ahead and make a motion for Commissioner Soberon to serve as our secretary.
I would second.
All right.
Discussion.
My handwriting's terrible.
No, but that's okay. You don't have to take
that's
minutes.
Okay.
We got people over here who take better notes than us.
With no discussion, I'd take a vote on nominating Commissioner Soberon to be our new secretary. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? How ethical.
Very good. All right.
Thank you, everybody.
Yes. My first duty as chair is to make everybody wear ties at the meeting.
Impeach!
Mr. Chair, I would let you know that I've worked for Travis County for 11 years and I've never worn one to Commissioner's Court yet. So if the county judge can't get me to wear a tie,
it's not happening. No.
I always tell my coworkers at the county if they see me wearing a tie, they probably need to head for the boats because there's a problem.
I thought
you had an event one time where you were dressed up and you came to the... You had a suit.
Yeah, but that wasn't Commissioner's Court.
Huh?
I don't wear it to Commissioner's Court. I wear a suit. I wear a suit every Tuesday, whether I need to or not.
You had to go to the state of the county or something, and you did have on.
That's a political event.
So moving on to new business 4B, City of Austin's budget process. I'm going to defer back to... if you guys remember him from years ago, our former chair, Einhorn.
Apparently, I receive an email as chair that I didn't read closely enough because I thought it went to the full commission, but it apparently comes to just the chair. And so there is an invitation for us to be involved in the city's budget process. I have no interest in being involved in the city's budget process, but...
So moved.
But
I moved
But it is an invitation, and maybe if we could just distribute it, it sort of explains how board and commission members can be involved in the budget process. But I mean, beyond asking for more staff resources, I mean, I suppose we could consider that. But, you know, we may be short-lived. We may not be long for this world anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I just think we should keep the points. Same staff and give them all raises.
I agree. I agree. Here, yeah. Here. Okay, well, if there's no additional discussion on that or anybody wanting to make any kind of a motion, silence befell the crowd, we can move on down to last item on the list, 4C, City Council Candidate Forum Planning. Defer to Commissioner McCormick.
I have been in contact with the Public Information Office and the League of Women Voters that we do the candidate forum planning with, and the first thing is to look for venues to have it, and of course, since the deadline for filing is not, is it, I want to say July or August.
It's August 20th.
It's August. Something like that. Even though we know most of the candidates that are running, I think there's one or two that haven't said whether they're running or not. One council member.
When does the filing period end for council members?
It's a very short filing period.
It starts at the end of July.
People are just declaring their intention at this point. They haven't actually filed yet. Okay.
Right.
It's so, and they look at venues, and then we can't do anything until we kind of see, you know, who's running and really who has opponents. Even though we have a forum, even if they don't have an opponent, that they participate in a forum. So we're just kind of on hold on that.
Okay.
But it's not difficult.
Okay.
Questions or discussion?
I'm a committee of one, and I work with the league and with the Public Information Office, and that way we don't need a lot of people. And it's been pretty calm with one exception. And our venues that we've had have really been okay. When we went to Montopolis last year, we had like 12 candidates or something. Well, there was one of them who protested vigorously about not going to the Montopolis Rec Center because of the part of town it was in. Well, that's where she lived. And we had APD out there because they thought that people would be afraid. I lived in Southeast D.C. I wasn't afraid to go. But we really didn't have a problem. Two of them kind of got in a little shouting match, but we took care of that. So that was it.
I would think you could take care of that.
I trust her too. Any discussions, discussion or questions for Commissioner McCormick, party of one?
Committee of one.
Committee of one. All right, hearing and seeing none. We can move down to item five, approval of minutes from the April 11th, 2018 regular commission meeting.
Second.
Moved by former past chairman Einhorn and former future past vice chairman Harding is a second. discussion. Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Very brief minutes.
Abstain. Yes, exactly.
Make room down there, Brian. I'm going to be down there next month.
Well, I'm rearranging the seating chart. It's going to be great. and I'll do that I'll do those minutes in the future on just asking for objection. Future,
I wonder if I still have my little Kathy Whitmire bows.
Future agenda items. I think the obvious one that sticks out is taking a report from what I guess we're calling the CRC working group, including possible action. I think that definitely needs to be noted there.
Do we have any hearings in the next?
So we're June 13th, which is the day after the work session,
August, right?
And the day before the council
August
hearing.
Is the next one.
We have a preliminary hearing in August.
Right. Okay.
Because it was postponed for...
It was postponed at the request of the respondent.
Initially, the respondent couldn't make it in May, and then the city auditors...
Staff couldn't make it in June, right?
Right. And then the respondent's gone on vacation in July, so we're at August.
And it was originally filed in March, right?
Right.
So
and the respondent had an issue with
rules of justice.
Expeditious, right.
So Sue and Lynn were off in July unless we come back in June, and at that time, call a meeting for July. Correct?
No, we have a meeting in July.
We do?
We can cancel. You have a lot of power now. You can cancel.
why don't we make that decision in June? So that's our timeline, correct? Having never done that before, as long as we make the decision in hearing immediately prior, we can cancel or add.
Thank you, Pete.
Any other agenda items?
You need to come down to if you don't need
future
to.
Agenda items besides taking a report from the CRC working group and possible action. Other than that, I would entertain a highly privileged motion to adjourn. So moved by Commissioner Harding.
I second.
Seconded by Commissioner Kale. And all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. I won't take opposition. You're adjourned.
Thank you, Chair and Vice Chair, for your service.
And the time, we are adjourned at 7:22. And
all right.
Yes. Thank you all very much.
Thanks to all those big shoes to fill as far as canceling.